squeeze about reading out some instructions before each meeting. Is that still being done? I haven't got anything through to read out.
I have sent to Bruno to the betrayer. I possibly can have a look.
Yeah, I suppose it's just the meeting protocol and making sure that everybody knows to mute their mics and things like that.
Okay. I've just got it from Louise there. So if I start by reading it out, word for word, I take it, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you all for joining us this afternoon for the meeting of the audit committee. Good to see everybody. I hope everybody's doing okay during these COVID-19 times. Just to start, hopefully everybody can hear me clearly. And as we are currently in unprecedented times, could I ask for everyone's cooperation and to adhere to the new guidelines with regard to the conduct of the meeting? Everyone should ensure their mobile phones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the meeting itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the meeting by hanging up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure if you wish to speak on an item, use the instant messaging facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. Members should ensure their cameras are switched on when speaking. Cameras should also be switched on when a vote is being taken. I would remind members to keep their instant messaging to the following letters. Type Q if you wish to ask a question, type P if you wish to propose, and type S if you wish to second. Please refrain from making any other comments using instant messaging. In the event that two councillors propose at the same time, the person who proposed first will be taken as a proposer, and the person who proposed second will be recorded as a seconder. Okay. I'll just bring up that instant. There it is there. Okay, members, if we can make a start. We'll start with the apologies. Anybody has any other apologies? Okay, I take it there aren't any other apologies. Item number two on the agenda is declarations of interest. Anybody with any declarations of interest? No, okay, thank you. And the third item on the business is the action sheet from the Audit Committee on the 6th of July. So again, we go through this member page by page for accuracy. And if you have any questions, please come in. Okay, item 3, page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, and page 8. Okay, I think yes, we have a question from Councillor Devon.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. It's just a matter arising from the action sheet. I think it's page 5, actually, AC/033/2020, and it was regarding AFM's investigation into the direct award contract. I know we got a brief update at our pre-meeting, but as per the action sheet, I was hoping to request that we would have a separate sort of single item agenda audit committee meeting in early November, and hopefully at that point, Christine and her team would have finalised their report into that issue, and then we can consider it at that meeting then. That's a proposal, please.
Thank you, Chair. Or thank you, Laura. Sorry. Okay, and any members of the other comments? Councillor Owen? Oh, you seconded. Okay, can we agree that then? Members, that's a very good idea. Obviously, the report has been worked on by Christine from ASM at the moment, and she hopes to have it finished within the next few weeks. And therefore, early November looks like a possible time to have it, rather than leave it to our next audit committee, which isn't until the 7th of December. So with that proposal and seconder, members, if we can agree to ask officers to put that meeting in place for members of the audit committee early November. Thank you.
Brona, okay. Just for accuracy, ASC 030-2020, the corporate risk register, we shouldn't be removing that from the action sheet just until members receive training, so that will be amended. And it's just for the tape.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. Yes, we'll change that. And based on that, then, members, can I have a proposer and seconder for the accuracy of the action sheet before we move forward?
Yeah, I have it proposed.
Thank you, Councillor Owen, and Councillor Byrne has seconded it as well. Thank you for that. Okay, moving on to item number 4, which is the presentation of the annual accounts and the annual government statement. And I believe Ken is with us to take us through that presentation.
Yes,
okay,
thank you,
Ken,
Chair.
Thank you.
Can I put the document onto the shared screen?
Sure, I believe if that's what you do normally, Ken, please. If members are happy with that, go ahead.
Can you see that on your screen now?
It's just loading at the moment, Ken.
All right.
There we have it now. Yes.
No.
Have members all got that in front of them on the screen?
Yes, I
do. Actually, don't have it on mine.
You know it off by heart, Ken, no doubt.
But I would like to see what you have on your. Hold on a second.
Well, you even see your mouse moving around as well, Ken.
Oh, so, do you?
Yeah, so something going to the back, maybe, you know, overlapping on it. Yeah, see you scrolling.
So you see key changes to format of accounts 2019-20?
Yeah.
Okay. You will be glad to hear that I will not be going through this 104-page document page by page. The only major change to the format for this year's accounts is the draft accounts had to be submitted to the department before the end of August and not the end of June, which is our custom. Some significant points that I would like to bring to the attention of the Audit Committee. All our land and buildings were revalued by Land and Property Services, and I will give you the numbers when I'm explaining the movement on the balance sheet later on in the presentation. General power of competence, which came into force for councils in Northern Ireland in March 2010, was not used during 2019-20. In simple terms, this gives councils the power to do anything an individual can do, provided it is not prohibited by legislation. There were no changes or significant changes to the accounting policies that are set out in pages 49 to 65. And as we are all aware, COVID-19 struck in mid-March, for the council went into lockdown with all the ramifications that this brought. The narrative report on pages 3 to 19 sets out how we tell the story of what happened financially during the year, linking our strategic objectives to our outcomes. The first few pages sets the organisational overview and external environment and gives a flavour of the operational model that we are using. It details how we spend the ratepayers' money of just under £60 million, and it does that in a graphical format. On page 5, it sets out a table of the structure of our governance arrangements, showing the areas that we concentrate on, such as financial control, performance management, internal audit and external audit, management assurances, risk management, and our health and safety arrangements. The performance report on page 10 refers to the corporate plan, setting out our missions and values, and details the progress achieved in these areas. On page 12, it sets out some of the Council's main achievements and details each performance improvement objective and shows the progress and status of the trend. The financial performance, as detailed on page 5, records that we had underspends in staff costs of £285,000. We had a rates finalisation positive from LPS of £655,000. We, in March of this year, we received £220,000 of COVID-19 support from the Department of Communities. We had insurance, we were less than budget by £117,000, but these were offset by overspends of over £1 million in waste management costs. The most significant capital projects completed during the year was the Saintfield Community Centre at £1.4 million, the Downpatrick HMRC at £1 million, Kitty's Road Community Centre was completed at £300,000, and we had a play strategy of £860,000, where 5 new play parks opened up during the year. The financial landscape for the Council is likely to remain challenging for the foreseeable future, with all the COVID-19 and Brexit ramifications, and this will have an effect when we are striking a robust EPP later on in the year. At the meeting in December, the Chief Executive will demonstrate that the Council is financially in a going concern basis, in that it can show that there are adequate reserves going forward. On page 18 and 19, we set out the expected funding streams that happened during the year, and in particular the Belfast City deal, the FFNI Full Fibre project, and the Peace 4 programme. The remuneration reports, pages 34 to 40, sets out the councillors' costs and the senior employees' salaries and benefits in kind. Members will be pleased to see a reduction in their allowances from £802,212 last year to £789,990 this year, and this was mainly due to a reduction in mileage costs. I would highlight page 27 of the governance statement, where we record the significant government issues, governance issues in 2019-20, which was identified through a review of the corporate risk register. The main areas of concern was procurement and contract management, the IT transformation project, the economic and political climate that we are currently in with COVID-19 and Brexit, we also demonstrate the risk with the Belfast City deal, and we highlight that there's risks with the planning backlog, and we refer to the absenteeism figures that are worse than expected. The next slide shows the expenditure and funding analysis, and basically this demonstrates that it highlights the spend by directorate, and as you can see, it's recording a small change to the general fund of just under £160,000. Next slide is the balance sheet, the top half of the balance sheet, where the fixed assets went from 186,000 to 189,000. The main drivers of this was we had additions of 8 million, we had revaluation of 4 million, and there was depreciation of 7.6 million during the year. So our net fixed assets are standing at 189,400,000. Long-term borrowing increased from 54 million to 59 million. Other long-term liabilities rose from 42 million to 54 million. And before I get a question, this refers to the deficit in the pension scheme, and note 21 is where you will get an explanation as to how the actuary calculated the shortfall. The bottom half of the balance sheet shows the usable reserves, and the main one there is the general fund, and as I said previously, that increased from decreased from 11,869,000 to 11,708,000. You will note that the capital receipt, the capital fund reduced from 1.255 million to 627,000, and this was used to reduce the MRP figure in the INE account. The figure of note in the usable reserves is the pensions reserve. It's the method the local authority accounting use for the deficit of the pension fund. We are allowed to set that off as a negative reserve. So it's up on the top half of the balance sheet, and it's down at the bottom half as well. the movement in reserves calculation shows that the general fund summary went from 11,869,000 to 11,708,000. As I was explaining there, we put figures into the INE, so you can see there was a deficit there of the of 10,961,792, but then this was adjusted through this mechanism that I was talking about, that we take it out between accounting bases and funding under regulations. So the net effect of that was a small reduction to our general fund of 160,000. The total of our provisions rose from 3.2 million, which we started the year with, and we ended in 31st of March 2020 at 3,510,000. One of the main reasons for this is that we added 500,000 to a provision for restructuring costs. We, in note 18, note what the payment, our payment statistics were, and this shows that we paid 90% of our invoices within the 30 calendar day target. In terms of contingencies, the only contingency that we have is with ARC21 regarding the procurement of the residual waste treatment project. The next steps in the annual accounts process, we have provided the draft accounts to DFC and our auditors in the middle of August this year. The NIAO are currently doing the audit, and it's ongoing. The accounts are available for public scrutiny between the 20th of October and the 16th of November. NIAO intend to complete the audit by the mid of November, and we will be presenting those accounts, those audited accounts, to the audit committee and recommend signing by the chief executive and chair of the council on the 7th of December this year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ken, for that very comprehensive presentation, and to yourself and the team, we appreciate all the work that's gone into preparing the accounts, because I know it's a significant piece of work. I wonder if you could take the presentation down off the screen then, Ken, and I would enable me to see the members. That would be great. Thank you.
Brona, you should be able to do that.
Okay, thank you. I've opened it up to the floor if anybody has any questions for Ken. I know of a couple of things just to mention, but if any members would like to ask Ken any questions. Councillor Byrne, we have a question from Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Two of the things I'd highlighted on this to ask a question about Ken's sort of touched on, but I just want to get a wee bit more information. On page 9, he talked about the capital fund and the movement of 700,000 in it. Was it in order to bring down the MRP And I remember, because a previous committee I talked about, is there a possibility of future loading MRP based on, you know, COVID, and if we can reduce this year's MRP by future loading later years? And I think it was told, no, that's not possible. But I'm just keen to find out, moving money from a capital fund to reduce the MRP, was that additional money paid on top of what our yearly MRP would be to reduce it? And the second question is on the 500,000. Hold on, I'm using the wrong mouse here, I have two screens. The 500,000 was the restructuring costs. Is that for staff restructuring, and what is that put aside for? It is obviously the, you know, people have to leave the post, severance pay. Is that what it's for?
I can take those, Chair, if you can tell everyone at my answer those.
Yeah, sorry, I was on, mine wouldn't unmute there. Please read it ahead.
The capital fund, the Legacy Down District Council had a capital fund of 1.2 million, I think, here, or 1.3 million into the council. What we did then 2 years ago, what we released that over a 2 year basis. And I suppose one of the benefits of that release was that I was able to reduce the MRP payment in those two, or the MRP charge in those 2 years, and thus I suppose benefited, if you like, the rates process in those 2 years. So that capital fund now fully released. So we have no further funds. You know, obviously going forward, we could as a council build up a capital fund, and any capital receipts that we get out of our sale of surplus assets is how we will do that. We'll build up a capital fund and we'll release it going forward. But we need the capital receipts to enable us to do that. So the capital fund of the Legacy Down District Council now has been released over the course of 2 years. The 500,000 provision that's in there, that is a restructuring, that is purely a provision and estimate at this stage, associated with planning for the future.
Councillor Byrne, want to come back in? Are you happy enough with that?
Yeah, no, thanks for that. I didn't realise it was from the Down Legacy Council. I did hear about that fund from the Down Legacy Council, but I do think it's important going forward that we do build up a capital fund and that we can see, obviously, the capital seats going in there, and then we can use it in the same way in future years. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Byrne. Councillor Devlin has a question.
Thank you, Chair and Ken. As usual, thanks very much for that. It was very, very detailed. I have one question. I'm not sure whether it's for you or for Doreena. It's regarding our reserves. I suppose none of us could have predicted, you know, COVID, and I suppose it really does re-emphasise the importance of us having reserves there and having that wee bit of, you know, cushion of protection as such. But and from my reading of what you're telling us, are that our reserves are still okay, whilst we're a wee bit under pressure, but we're still okay. And I'm just wondering, maybe this question is too simplistic, but is there just a set amount that we need to have as reserves? Does that change and fluctuate every year as per the rate base? So how has that worked out in terms of how much we're actually supposed to retain them back each year? And are we okay in terms of comparatively with other councils in terms of our reserves? Or maybe that question is too simplistic, I'm not sure.
No, in terms of, so that, I suppose it's important to note, Laura, that that level of reserves is at the 31st of March 2020. So a lot's happened since then in a very short period of time. So I think you know, next year we'll really tell the COVID story and the COVID impact on that. So we were very fortunate that our level of reserves was at that level, really at the end of March. In terms of how much should we hold, I'm not going to quote this 100% right, but the local government auditor has given guidance on this, and I think the Prudential Code has as well, and it's really sufficient to meet your medium-term commitments, or a phrase to that effect. So there's no magical percentage or set amount, and I know each year during the rates process we do an assessment of what we believe we need to meet our medium-term commitments and any other commitments that we know about, and we present that to members, and that enables the Chief Executive then to provide the statutory assurance that the Council can continue and is in a financially viable position to continue, which, again, you know, she's under a statutory obligation to do at the date that we strike the reserve. High hours compares to other councils, I couldn't really comment on, to be honest with you. I wouldn't know other councils in sufficient detail to be able to comment on that. But it's certainly something that the local government auditor each year in her report does a comparison of. I think the last report we've tabled previously, so I can circulate that. But I think, Brian, maybe correct me wrong, I think it's probably for the year ended March 19 is maybe out. So we can have that circulated to members and you can see where our reserves position is versus other councils at that point in time.
Okay, thanks, Jen. I suppose then obviously because the COVID tail, in terms of those figures, when will we be seeing those again? You know, obviously it won't be this time next year. Will we be seeing them prior to that at one of those FPNR maybe? I'm not sure.
We only actually show them in this format each year when we compile the statutory accounts. We actually only show the level of reserves. What we will bring back to members, and I suppose what has been more pertinent, is it's around the going concern issue that Ken talked about. So we will be presenting detailed cash flow figures to members during FPNR. But in terms of this presentation and this format, it's a statutory accounting format that we only actually do annually. So we won't see it until the summer of next year.
Okay. Thank you, Zina. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dorina, for that. Just want to pick up on a couple of things as no other questions from members. In relation to the going concern, obviously we all know that that's critical going forward, something new for councils. We didn't have to really look into too much depth before COVID-19. But a critical element of that, and in line with Councillor Devon's question, is that ability of the council having the that they're adequately able to meet future liabilities that we know are going to arise because of the situation before we strike the accounts. And I know you've touched on some of that, Dorina, and that you're going to be bringing back a report to the next audit committee in relation to going concern to give members that assurance around going concern and that meeting future liabilities. We look forward to that report, so that would be very useful. And the other thing I wanted to raise was in relation to the pension fund. And Ken already probably beat me to it, but just for a bit of clarity around that, it has increased from the 42 million in 18-19 to the 53.8 million in 1920. And I did read the note, Ken. Didn't understand it all, mind you, because it is very complicated. But is it, that's a huge increase in 1 year. Is it partly to do with the impact on the markets that COVID had at the end of March, at the time that this would be presented in the accounts? Could you give us just a bit more information on that, Ken? Thank you.
If you go to note 21, which is on page 92, the main variances year on year were the actuarial gains and losses in financial assumptions. They reduced by 4.567 million. The other one of note, which was the remeasurements of the assets, which I think is what you were referring to in terms of the market, the value of the markets. There was a reduction of 15,376,000, whereas the previous year there was a gain of 7.2 million. So to answer your question, the big driver was the remeasurement of the assets.
Okay, Ken, thank you. Let's hope that I would imagine that's bounced back somewhat in the marketplace, but let's hope it's in a better position this time next year. Okay, thank you for that. Could I just ask, if possible, for the presentation to be removed on the screen? All I can see is the handsome Ken here and the presentation. I can't see anybody else. I'm not sure if you can see me or
Ken. Yes. Sorry.
Great, thank you. And once again, Ken and Dorina, thank you for that. That's very useful.
Thank you.
Okay, members, if we can move on to item number 5, which is the Corporate Risk Register, and I believe Dorina is taking that item.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So members, we present our quarterly review of the Corporate Risk Register. You'll note that it went through the senior management team and a detailed review was completed on the 9th of September. Our assurance statements were also received for the period ending the 30th of June, and they are used to inform the risk register should there be any issues arising from those. The assurance statements were tailored to reflect the impact of COVID on circumstances, and you'll know that from the last audit committee we have impacted all our risks for COVID. So I suppose there's been minor changes to this register since you've seen it last. The Appendix 1 or page 4 of this item shows you at a glance the changes since the last time you saw the risk register. So there have been some minor changes to scoring and the reasons for it are there. We have merged risks 12 and 13, and that's largely due to comments that arose from the audit committee the last thing we met. Both were concentrating on sickness absence, one due to, I suppose, if you like, our ongoing reasons for sickness absence, and second specifically to relate to COVID. So we have merged the two, and they both still appear in the risk register that's presented for you, but with your agreement today, then risk L will be removed and risk 15 then encaptures all of the risks and the causes, etc. So that's really everything. Happy to take any comments or questions, Chair.
Thank you, Dorina. Have members any questions on in relation to the risk register? Questions from Councillor Byrne. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I agree with the merging of the two. I was reading the first one about the sickness absence and was wondering why COVID wasn't even mentioned, and I had scribbled out nearly half a page of notes, and then it moved on to the next slide, and I felt like a twat. But you live and learn. You should briefly look to it first before making notes. Yeah, so I agree with merging both those, but see the Corporate Risk 2, where we're talking about the procurement, and it's a thing that I've been banging on about for a while since we got the procurement training, and I know there was a major piece, and we're going to have a standalone report coming to October, but we're all about getting this the risk score down, and I'm just wondering, by moving to, and there's been many conversations about how we deal with procurement, but if we did move to something like implementing a central procurement hub, surely that would reduce the risk right across the directorates. I just want to get the view from the director on that. If we had a central procurement hub that was dealing with procurement that all the directorates could tap into, that would be one action that would reduce the risk in that corporate risk too.
Well, I suppose we do have a central procurement unit at the minute, but I suppose what we have looked at is that we can't, as a council, we're too big for that small unit to actually undertake all procurement. But even more importantly, we can't rest the contract management side of procurement with that small team of people. So we've got an internal, central team of procurement expertise, but the big thing we've been concentrating really on is training all of those staff members who are involved in procurement and contract management in their roles as well, and drawing on the expertise of the procurement team where needed. And we do have plans to strengthen that internal procurement team, but we'll never be able to house all procurement and all contract management with just a team, a small team of some, 4 or 5 people. So we definitely are going to strengthen it, but we do need all people who are involved in procurement, and actually that's a big part of the organisation. From small procurements right up to large procurements, we've spent a lot of time, and we will continue to spend time training staff in their responsibilities for the level of procurement activity that they undertake. So we're coming at it, I suppose, twofold, really, Councillor, in terms of strengthening the internal team, but we will never be in a position where everything is going through that central team.
Okay, thank you, Director. If anybody has any other questions, No, okay, we just note that item. Thank you. Moving on to the next item, number 6, prompt payment statistics. Gerard, if I could ask you to take that report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So this is just to monitor the statistics of prompt payments for the quarter. So at the last committee meeting, members wanted a comparable. So basically something to compare each quarter stats. So as Ken showed in the accounts, this was published within our annual report and also on DSC's website. For the 2019-20 year, we paid 90% of invoices within 30 days, 17.2 within 10 days, and our average number of days to pay an invoice was 19. And also just for a comparable, I've included the final quarter of the 19-20 year, which is probably our best quarter in relation to paying invoices. So then we paid 91% of invoices within 30 days, and our average number of days to pay suppliers was 18. So the stats I'm presenting at this committee is the first quarter of this year, which was COVID. So stats have reduced, which is understandable. There was 82% of invoices paid within 30 days, and 12% paid within 10 days, and 18% outside the 30-day period. So this is when staff were sent home at the end of March. Not all accounts payable staff had remote access and didn't have laptops. So the stats did go down, but now all accounts payable staff can work remotely. And another problem was staff need to approve invoices that aren't in account payable, whether they're in refuse or leisure. So I know most staff now can work from home and work remotely. So the next stats from July to September will hopefully show an improvement on the quarter one stats. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerard. If members have any questions? Question from Councillor Owen.
Hi, it's actually more a comment or a statement rather than a question, if that's okay, Chair. I just wanted to say to Gerard and to Dorina that given the upheaval that you must have had in that quarter, I'm very impressed that all of those things were able to be paid. I would have expected the percentages to have kind of gone completely haywire and all over the place and totally random. So the fact that all the invoices have been paid is great. So all it is from me is just a sort of well done, guys, and you know, in the middle of everything to be able to keep the bills paid is really good. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor Owen, and I'm sure every member echoes your sentiments, so thank you for that. Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, no need to repeat, Chair, that's exactly what's been to say. Jared had just said, you know, moving from the last quarter of the previous year, the first quarter of this year, obviously the drop of COVID, and I noted that, and that he hoped in the second quarter they'll improve. And I thought it was, you know, a wee bit solemn to say that it's moved from Jared to from 18 days to 24. I think it's brilliant that 4 out of 5 invoices have been paid on time under 30 days during COVID. I think that's excellent. So yes, it will improve in the next quarter, but I don't think it's something that we should be solemn about.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne. Wise words indeed. Okay, thank you. If our members are happy, we will agree to note that item. Okay, thank you, members, and thank you, Gerard. So items 7 to 12 are deemed to be restricted under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act Northern Ireland 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information and the public, may by resolution be excluded during these items of business. So if I could ask for a proposer and a seconder to go into closed business, please. Councillor Owen has proposed. And Councillor Devon has seconded. Thank you for that. Can we just check with the member services that everything's in order to move on? Dorina, would you be able to take us back through the decisions that were made during the meeting? Or have you, maybe you haven't been recording, or do you want me to try it?
Sorry, Chair, I haven't been recording them. Maybe Sarah will have been.
Okay, do you want me to go through, and Sarah, maybe if she keep me right? In relation to item number 7, the update in relation to audit recommendations, members agreed to note the report dated the 24th of September 2020 from Mr. G. Byrne, the Audit Services Manager. Oh, sorry. Yes. Yes, from G. Byrne, Audit Services Manager. Item number 8, Members of the update in relation to fraud and whistleblowing. Members agreed to note the report from the 24th of September 2020 again from Mr. G. Byrne, Audit Services Manager. Item number 9, the direct award contracts. It was agreed by members to note the report dated 24th of September from Mr. G. Byrne, Audit Services Manager again. Item number 10, ASM audit report. It was agreed to note the ASM audit report from Christine O'Hagan. Apologies for that. And it was also proposed and seconded by Councillor Owen proposed and Councillor Sharvin seconded to approve the changes to the Internal Audit Plan 2021. Item number 11, it was agreed to note the ASM report from Christine Hagan in relation to the report on complaints handling. And item number 12, it was agreed by members in relation to the Northern Ireland Audit Office report on additional risk of financial resilience of the Council. Members agreed to note that report presented to the Audit Committee on the 24th of September 2020. I'm going to stop there and ask Sarah, have I completed all I needed to do? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
That's great, thank you. Okay, members, so we have had a proposal and a seconder to come out of closed business, and we are now moving to item number 13 and 14. I believe Kate is with us. Kate Bingham, you're welcome to the meeting. Kate is with us, and if Kate wants to, can we just note these reports? I believe they've already been to the special PNR. Members have an opportunity. Now, unless there is a member who's very keen to ask a question, please feel free. No, I'm not seeing any member looking to come in. Okay, members, if we're happy, we agree to note those reports. Okay, thank you. I think, members, that brings us to the end of the meeting. I just wanted to say thank you to all of you. It was a very successful meeting, I believe, today. And I also just want to wish you all for the next few weeks safe health, and also to wish Gerard Byrne all the very best in his move to Lisburn. He has been an excellent person to work with, and I really appreciate all the time he's invested in myself, as I've learned for the last 12 months and getting up to speed on everything. So, Gerard, all the very best in the future, and we hope to see you back very soon. Okay, members, I think that brings us to the end of the meeting. Okay, thank you now.